And then all of a sudden they hear horses approaching. So yeah. Then what I like to think of as Mad Dog has to then
Home Alone this.
Mad Dog rolls over again and just leaves Willow in a tree. ... There's nothing. We don't know how he gets down.
There is some pretty good physical comedy in this that, well, I don't know how much of this is Ron Howard and how much of this is George Lucas, but there's lots of physical humor in this fantasy movie.
You got to, because if you're not going to have flashy bits every 5 to 10 minutes, I need a little bit of hilarity. And that's cool. So poof into a tree. Then we cut to the black root scene in front of the waterfall.
Right.
Where now we see Mad bonding with Allura.
He calls her Sticks. It's adorable.
I love that. I mean, I call my nephew Lubert, but his mom adopted that too. So now I just go by Lou most of the time. But like, how friggin' cute is like a good solid
nickname.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a new nickname for my nephew. We probably have a couple years to work into it, but like Sticks, maybe because they both like black root and it looks like Sticks.
Maybe. I don't know. Either way, it's adorable.
You made me look up what black root is on the internet.
I did. I make you do a lot of things, but I kind of think you like to be bossed around.
It is sort of like Ipecac. It is a vomit inducer.
So when Willow is like, you never ever give black root to a child, and Mad's like, oh, I was raised on black root and I turned out just fine. And it's like, okay, so your mom raised you on constantly. When I first saw the scene, my initial reaction with the shape of it, it automatically made me think of black licorice, which could be inherently bad for a kid because black licorice has a tendency to raise your heart rate. And so it's one of those things where if you, like, there was a guy who ate it for like 3 months straight and he died of a heart attack. Do not eat too much black licorice. So if you don't like it, that's totally valid. I absolutely love black licorice, but I can only have it in like bits, like once, like I gorge on it once a year.
How about this, ladies? Maybe Allura is already an accomplished puker and she just needed a little additional foof to her repertoire. A little foof.
Like if it is the black root of our universe, then, you know, maybe it's something that maybe it settles stomach if you just chew on it in the right way. And Mad Mardigan knows how to because he was raised on it.
We come to the village on the edge of... Okay.
It's an abandoned village.
Yeah. Okay. But this is the Great River, right? Except it looks like a lake.
I don't know. Like there were like two different shots. There was the shot above the village where they were like, that's the island we got to go to. And then they get down to the village and I'm like, that doesn't look like the same location.
It's probably not.
Yeah.
My problem is that the head Nelwyn. The head Nelwyn. He said, you know, you have to cross the Great River, but I don't think we ever come to a river because this village on the edge of this water looks like a sound, which we all grew up on, or kind right. of. But
across the Great River was part of that montage of the group with all of the
They
the
passed
members.
The Great River and didn't say boo about it?
Well, it was like before they get to the crossroads because like his travel after like getting like there's like two calls to action. There's the call to action from the High Alduin, but then there's the call to action by Shalandriel, who's like, you have to do this for Allura because she likes you and you're like important that way. So like the Great River was like the first montage.
Okay, here's my problem. They come up to this village and the second they step up there, they should have been like, this village is, and get your bleeps ready, Jen, this village is,
it's like this dead ghost town of a village, like the huts are completely demolished and maybe there's a boat, but I don't know if I would trust it. Maybe that's the reason why Willow doesn't take the baby in the boat.
Yeah, so Willow finds a boat, says goodbye to Mad. He's the like, Mad's like, hate to see you go, love to watch you leave. like, Mad comes over to the kiddo and he's all like, hey, I like you a whole bunch. He's chewing on a black stick the entire time. You kind of think he's going to give her the black stick, which I would have done, especially if, like, a big middle finger to Willow on the way out the door. But he's just like, hey, I like you a lot. You're a good kid. I hate to leave you, but, like, bye.
Yeah.
And he walks away and Willow's like, hey, Mad. And Mad turns around and he's like, what? And Willow's like, thanks. And Mad's like, cool. And then he leaves.
Yeah.
And then Willow sticks the baby inside of a half-burned hut as, like, no one will find you here. And then the Brenn is like, we will protect our life as if it were our own. And then he gets in a boat and f***s off at least half, if not a full mile away.
Correct. And, like, my whole thought is, why not just, I mean, like, maybe he didn't want to take the baby in the boat because he didn't know what was going to be on the island, and maybe the boat wasn't entirely safe. But, like, there's, like, even when I first watched this, I was like, why not just take, like, you're literally leaving the baby out in the middle of nowhere. Shouldn't you, like, take the baby with you?
Maybe they can't swim, like a hobbits can't swim.
Right.
Do you think?
Like, I can't swim. I can't swim. Like, I can float. I can do the dead man float.
Can you doggy paddle?
I mean, maybe. I think I've tried to tread water. Like, the most of the reason why I'm that I have such good buoyancy is because of the amount of fat on me.
Look, I learned from Rift Tracks a number of years ago that if you weigh less than the amount of water you displace, you're going to float. And that's good math. I just feel like babies in general weigh less than the amount of water they displace. So she'd be fine. It doesn't matter. Because maybe it's a plot device of some kind.
I mean, it doesn't really have much weight because when Willow gets to the island, he's like, Finn Rizal, are you here, Finn Rizal? And then it's like,
I did want to mention a brief Sean fact as we're getting into the island with Finn Rizal. As Willow is traveling, there is a deleted scene here.
I want this scene so bad, guys.
When there was the DVD release of this movie, Warwick Davis is on the audio commentaries on it, and he talks about this scene.
It's got to be on some sort of tape somewhere I can watch it, right?
I don't know if they fully produced it or if they cut it or what, but he mentions that there was going to be a boy that transforms into a shark, and Willow had to fight the shark on the way to the island. And why we don't have Shark Boy in this, especially considering, like, how good friends Spielberg, Lucas, and Howard are, and Spielberg doing Jaws. Like, he could have just borrowed the shark from Jaws.
Borrowed the shark from Jaws. Yeah, put, like, little boy arms on it and had it wiggle around.
It was a close to a 2-hour movie in 1988, and they were probably worried about, like, does this actually add anything to the plot? Because here's the thing, this movie is really good about, like, keeping things in that actually adhere to the plot.
It doesn't matter. I mean, I'm mad about it. Okay, so we get to the island where Giselle?
Finn Rizal.
Finn Rizal?
Rizal.
My notes call her Giselle for the rest of the time. So with a G, let's be nice, but, like, for the rest of the time. So forgive me already because sorry. Mm-hmm. But okay, so he's like, Finn, right? Wanders around. Here's nothing. He looks like there's human bones everywhere. We don't know why. Does she eat them? Did they come there? We don't know why, right? Were they her captors? But now she's a possum still, so that doesn't matter. We don't know.
Shark boy victims.
Maybe. But she's hanging out there, and he looks like he's about to leave, right? And then all of a sudden you hear, ooh, right? Except, and I hope Shock's talk is still happening when this happens, but Madeline makes a noise that we used to call the gerbil noise. That sounds exactly like the possum noise that Giselle makes when she is a possum.
Yeah.
And it's like, ooh, except I can't do it. And Madeline does it perfect. And I would put it in a bottle and keep it next to my heart for the rest of eternity if I could make that noise, or if I could capture her of that noise. So please make that noise, Madeline. I hate to make a call out to Shock Talk, but, like, I want it on audio so that I can listen to it later.
Finn Rizal is voiced mostly voiced in the movie. She's got, she does eventually have an appearance, but she's mostly voiced. And that's done by Patricia Hayes. Would anyone like to guess where we have seen Patricia Hayes before?
I don't know, but I'm so excited to hear.
She's the scientist's wife in The Neverending Story.
I know. I knew you'd love it. I knew you'd love it. I knew you'd love it. I knew you knew it. I knew.
So that's the same lady who says, so when we were, I'm going to hold on to it. I got a thing I want to say. Okay, never mind.
We're almost there. We're like, you're fine. Yeah.
Okay. So she goes ahead and Willow shows Shalandriel's wand. And she's like, the wand, the prophecy, then the Laura Danum, she's here. Take me to her. And then scene cut. And then she's like on Willow's shoulders. Like, oh, she's so pretty.
Inside the little weird derelict hut that we've been in before.
Right.
But then all of a sudden the brownies are like, horses, 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 right? So now he's trying to run with, he's trying to run with the baby, the possum somewhere, the brownies are elsewhere. Right.
They hear like clippity-clops, clippity-clops, clippity-clops.
And they manage to get nowhere before they are absolutely captured.
And they got, you got the soldiers, the guy with the mask, mm-hmm. and you got Sorsha, and like they have Mad Mardigan, mm-hmm. and they're just sort of like, and one of the brownies says, oh, he ratted us out. But no, he didn't, because there is a line in there that says that do you want to say it?
I want to say it, because the thing, so what happens is Mad Mardigan looks at Willow and he's like, hey man, I'm real sorry. And Willow's like, you right? And then he gets like kicked off of his horse, and then one of the guards says,
we told you we'd get him without your help.
Right. So even though one of the brownies was like, he totally ratted us out, we have like in universe dialogue that pretty much contradicts that point. And Mad Mardigan is not actually evil because he didn't rat them out.
Yes. Okay. So they're like, hey, gather them up. They're coming with us. Everyone gets chained up. It's a whole fudging thing. And, okay. So they get led away. I don't really care about that, because when we cut to the brownies again,
mm-hmm.
and the brownies are like, they're like, wow. They start running after them. They get like 10 feet. And they're like, I don't think we can catch up with those horses. And the other one's like, I don't think so either. Right? And then he's like, are you suggesting we go home?
And he's like, no, this is more fun.
Yes. And I think that's us as a podcast as a whole.
Yeah. There was a running gag throughout the throughout our watch of this movie that if podcasters got together to remake Willow, we would be the brownies, but we would be switching different parts.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Okay. This is the point where in what we're watching, I realize that Peck is a racial slur.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of had the feeling for it, but then like when they're walking in a line and they're all in chains and Grizel is trying to teach Willow the words for her transformation and he's struggling with it. But then Sorsha, thank you. Sorsha rides up and I don't know if you noticed this, but Mad instinctively goes to protect him, like,
yeah,
shoves him to the other side of the road so she doesn't mangle him with her horse.
And we saw in the previous scene, Mad Mardigan says something sly to Sorsha, and she like kicks him in the face and everything.
Yeah,
he's wearing his like dress as a diaper at this point.
Yeah, but now in this scene, they've given him some black clothes and the same brown boots right. that he's wearing before.
Still sexy as all get out.
Oh my god. Oh, Val Kilmer, if you could mm-hmm. just stasis there and then come now here. Super down.
Right.
So
Mad Mardigan getting super protective over Willow, and then they get
Willow's like, hey, let me take care of her because I know her and she knows me and I can take care of her. She's sick. And she's like, I don't need your help taking care of a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fierce, independent, non-married, unchild woman. I can take care of a baby.
Right. And so like there's tension between Sorsha and Mad Mardigan. Like he says, she's like, what are you staring at? And he's like, your leg. I'm imagining ripping it off, you know, like they're not supposed to be
breaking it, but I'm down.
Breaking it. Yeah. Yeah. So like there's time lapse. They've been,
we don't know how long it's been. Then right. all of a sudden they're in snow, and then you see Willow fall and start mm-hmm. getting dragged. And then you see, and you love this, and I love this, and mm-hmm. you probably love this, but
without skipping a beat, Mad Mardigan grabs Willow and puts him up on his shoulders.
Piggyback style. Mm-hmm. Piggyback.
Yeah. And you know, like we talk a lot about consent on this podcast, but like there's a part of me that feels like some of these transition scenes aren't meant to be like same day. They're not meant to be short. They're supposed to be longer. And so like I can't help but think that like maybe if Mad Mardigan's like, hey, if you ever get tired, can I do anything for you? Like put you up on my shoulders. And Willow maybe is like, oh, I don't know about that. And then he's like, yeah, you can go ahead and do that. So like I feel like they would have had that conversation, because at this point he just kind of like goes and swoops him up. But maybe he hasn't, because we don't have anything everything in universe.
I think a lot of times if you're super miserable, that intervention is fine. Mm-hmm. Like, if I saw you super hurting and I threw myself under your shoulder, if you're like, hey, f*** off, then yeah, I would do that. If you're actually hurting, you might not be in a place to be able to ask for help. And I think that if you want to get legal about it, that is not covered under the Good Samaritan law.
Mm-hmm.
But it's close enough. If you refused help after it was offered or even initially
initiated.
Yeah. Like, okay, you'd have to release consent-wise from that, right? But otherwise, if somebody is silent and letting you help, then it's kind of implicit that it's acceptable consent. I think there's lots of different ways to look at that, mm-hmm. but definitely like be looking at the person you're helping and see if you're doing it in an acceptable way.
Correct.
Nearly all of Mad Mardigan's script is improvised.
No.
Yeah. And that's a Val Kilmer trait. Like, he gave all about this role. Like, he didn't, and that's just him, like, maybe in general, that's Val Kilmer. But in this particular casting, there are some interviews that say, like, we just let him do whatever he wanted because it was genuine enough, but he wouldn't have accepted any kind of scripted words from most of this. And that's interesting because you would have gotten, here's a little side note from Sean as well on the character of Mad Mardigan. He was not necessarily their first pick. Can you guess who might have also auditioned and has this as his greatest disappointment for not getting this role?
Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
Could you imagine Jeff Goldblum in this role?
I thought you were telling me the truth, and I was like, no.
I was just, I mean, we were talking about Earth Girls Are Easy, and so Jeff Goldblum was the first one that came to mind.
Okay, now I want to pick one. Okay, so we're talking 88. Sexy male lead. If you say Antonio Banderas, I will stab you. Okay, not Antonio. Jen just gave me the Knicks. One of their number one, sorry I didn't get this roles.
It is their greatest disappointment that they didn't get this role.
Is it a British actor? Okay, little hints. Is it a British actor?
No.
American actor?
American actor.
Somebody that I've screamed about in the past? We've been together 22 years. You can tell me if I've screamed about them or not.
I don't know. I mean, I've seen more of his movies after he was popular than I have seen of him while he was popular.
Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, that's a really great baby you got there. I'll take it off your hands.
I don't like it. Oh, my God. Like,
gentlemen, meet Lug.
88.
Let's not take too long on this.
Shut up. We're going to take as long as it takes.
We're going to be here all night.
Oh, that's not long for this world. Okay. Carrie Elwes?
No.
Could it be?
What if I gave you a hint?
British, I think, anyway.
Hint?
Yeah, this is my hint.
I don't know.
Nicholas Jack Nicholson.
Nicholas Cage.
If I picked up the iPad and lifted it up over
I know
head.
Who it is.
Who?
John Cusack.
It was John Cusack.
Shut your face.
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
See, like.
Do not.
This is like touchdown, a but you talking box, about like, yeah. things over your head. I'm
yeah,
like.
Yeah, boombox. Yeah. Okay, no. No. More. Would rather Joan Cusack.
I mean, that would be great too. Because there would be lesbians in it by the end.
I need more gay people in my 1988 romance.
I need more gay fantasy. People in my fantasy. It's too heteronormative.
So John Cusack, f*** off. Take this baby. That should make my mother happy, which is every middle-aged woman who's ever said anything ever.
Right. Like, after their trek, they get stopped, and it's late at night, and Willow still has the super powerful wand, and Finn Rizzell is, like, telling him all of the magic words, and so he's...
You must take me back to my human form.
Right, and the brownies catch up with him.
They're like, I need no one to interrupt me while I perform this incantation. And then it's like, hello, guys! We are back! And they manage to catch up over an entire mountain in half a day, it seems like, movie time-wise. So, the brownies help unlock the thing. In the meantime, they hit Val Kilmer in the face with their broken heart dust.
Right.
And then, why does my note says consulate Willow? Consentilate.
Consensual? Okay.
This is consentilate.
So I don't know what your notes are talking about, but as the dust hits Mad Mardigan,
he becomes dumb.
Yeah. What is it? Finn Rizzell is transforming from a possum into a crow.
A beautiful crow with like a weird white crest that I'm not familiar with in a lot of blackbirds, but right. I assume it's a whole thing.
Right.
So then they decide to go. Okay. So they escape because they finally broke the lock.
Right.
And then they're like, we need to go find the baby. And Mad's like, okay. And so he's like laughing and happily dumb. And
yeah, he's drunk.
He's love drunk. Right. Mm-hmm. And so then they've managed to sneak their way to the edge of
Sorsha's tent.
Right. And Willow looks and says, the baby's right there. And Mad's like, hey. I have skills with this. Let me do it. Mm-hmm. And he's like, are you sure? I'm sure. And then he goes in. And then we see Sorsha, who has hot whilst sleeping disorder, which I do not have, which Jen does have, which I've never watched you sleep.
All right.
I assume you do have. I'm sure you're very attractive while sleeping. But
in between the snoring and the farting.
Okay. I'm the farter. Jen's the snorer. I'm the farter. You're the snorer. Let's be fair. Pitch is the interrupter. So he sneaks in, he goes, he sees the baby, and then he's like, oh, I love you. How can I not love you? And he goes and he's like, get him, kissed her. And then Will's like, hey, you nut, don't do it. Right? And
right.
So then
he still like, goes in for the kiss.
Well, then he like walks away and he's like, and then he like goes back and he's like, how could I miss this? And he's like, oh, something, blah. It doesn't freaking matter. He like goes in for a kiss. She's like,
never without my consent.
she basically Fifth Elements him.
Yeah, and so he's like reciting poetry to her as she like has a knife to him, and then it like gets up to his throat, and he's just like, I don't care. And
she's the one who tears his shirt open, and we see his like delightfully hairy, but like still like super defined chest with his little nip nops out there.
And she's not cutting him. She could very easily cut him.
Right. So she's like, my sun, my earth, my moon, my stars, blah, 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 blah.
I dwell in darkness without you, which is my favorite line that he says in this moment.
Okay. So then the guards rush in. She's like, what? And he's like, huh? And then she looks for the baby.
They rush in with Willow, who has the baby, because in the midst of all of this, Willow's like, I got to do something.
He's right.
Yeah, but they catch him, and then they the guards bring Willow back in, and she's just like, deceiver!
Because she looks at the bed, like there's a whole cut to her looking at the bed, and then he's all like, well, jig is up, and Val hits the tent pole, and then as the tent comes down around them, and you pointed this out to me because I missed it twice, ladies and jelly spoons, he pulls her in for a kiss as the tent comes down, and then all three of them escape, meaning Willow, Allura, and Val, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Willow, Allura, and Val.
Yeah.
Val. Okay, so they escape, and the brownies come later, and they're like, they left us again.
I know.
I love that, because that comes later, but mm-hmm. What's really interesting is that Val's like, hey, you guys climb on that shield, and then he starts whipping and whirling around, and like slashing and hacking, and then Willow turns to him, and he goes, you really are great.
Yeah.
And then he like hits the ground.
Yeah, he like does a flourish with his sword, and then he falls down because it's on snow.
But you were saying a thing about that. About
So if you watch any YouTuber videos where they're actually like looking at, they're talking with sword experts, and the sword experts are going through some of these sword fighting scenes, then like I've only seen one, but the guy was like, you know, I think the guy like specifically talked about this scene in Willow, and he was like, you know, if you're going to be fighting someone with a sword, you got to be careful about doing like a lot of turns and flourishes, because you are still dealing with someone who has a pointy thing at you, and if you turn your back to him, specifically the turning your back to him, that can go ahead and give them your opponent an opportunity to stab you. So you never want to it's like, you know, you never want to stop pointing your pointy end at the person that you're fighting.
That is an excellent point. But hey, he survives, and then Val Kilmer jumps on the sled with the baby and the young man, who is Willow.
It's like a dummy. Like in some shots, it's very obviously like a stunt man and then a dummy holding another dummy, which I'm totally on board for, because like we don't need to be putting people into unnecessary risk.
Warwick Davis needs to be treasured.
Yes.
But this scene will have Warwick Davis played by a dummy with a red wig. But okay, so we have this incredible sledding scene that woo 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 slice, and we cut back and forth. There's like, there's Val, and then there's Warwick, and then there's baby reaction shot, but you never see the baby on the sled because thank God, mm-hmm. right? And then sometimes it's just Val or a stunt double, and then a dummy and a baby dummy, and then. And then maybe it's all three of them are dummies, and then Val falls off, and then maybe it's just a dummy and a baby dummy. And there's like one really rickety digga 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 scene where you're like, nope, that's not how that works. Right. And then Warwick and the baby fly into an open door of a town that they come across that has got to be at least a couple miles away, mm-hmm. right? And then Val, who's fallen off and is now tumbling down the mountain, he becomes this big Swiss roll of a thing.
Feels like it takes me out. Like when I was younger, I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of funny. But like as an adult, I'm like, what?
It looks so big and heavy. It should have taken out the building that it ran into mm-hmm. is what it feels like. But he just hits it. He comes out and he's like, huh? And then Warwick is like, they've been sledding all night. He's like, hey, last night, sun full shining. He's like, last night, like it wasn't an hour ago. He's like, last night, you were spouting poetry at her. And he's like, what? And he's like, you're the sun, you're the moon, you're the stars.
I love you, Sorsha. I'd die without you, Sorsha. You almost got killed.
Yeah. It's so good. But then all of a sudden,
Mad Mardigan is like, love Sorsha. I don't love her. I hate her. She kicked me in the face. He's like, no, 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 not the face, not the face. You know, like, that's the moneymaker.
He's not wrong. Not in this movie.
Yeah.
So then they hear the horses coming, and the people of this weirdly small town on the side of a snowy mountain are like, oh, it's the evil queen's people.
Spinach.
Kale.
Kale.
It's Kyle. Superman's coming. Okay, so then I think it's pretty nice. Matt is like, hey, we need a place to hide. And then they hide all three of them in mm-hmm. the basement of a building that is searched by Skull Guy, who then rides off in another direction. But then the floor is kicked at by Sorsha, and she's like, me. And she comes down the stairs into this secret hiding place, and she's immediately taken hostage by Mad.
There's also some other people who are hiding under there, and one of them is Urk.
He's like, I knew you'd make it out of there.
Sorry, I got you.
No. Yeah, he was like, I knew you'd make it out of there. And I was like, no, you said die in your coffin.
Yeah, I know.
Rot in your coffin.
Right. And so like Sorsha gets captured, and this gives them an opportunity to pretty much like hold her hostage. And they're like, we need to get to Tirizlin. There's a great army there who can go ahead and fight Bab Morda. And so they go through, and Urk is like, oh, you have to go ahead. And like, there's nothing there. It's a ghost town. And is like, but Mad Mardigan's like, I trust Willow. And because they don't really have any other options. So,
well, he's like, who do you stand with? And he's in front of his lady love. And he's just like, I stand with this guy.
Yeah.
Like, why not?
So the guards come back, and Mad Mardigan's able to kind of like, you know, get onto a horse. Willow's able to get onto a horse. He still has Sorsha as like a hostage. Mm-hmm. And then they go trekking off. And then as the guards are going to make an escape after him, that's when everybody else who was kind of hiding underneath the basement, uh-huh. they start attacking him. And that's when my notes go, the peasants are revolting.
Okay, but like, okay, so as they make their escape, and like blonde guy's like, good for you, right? Mm-hmm. As they all escape, Grizel is like, it's just this way as the crow flies, because she's a crow now. And that, I was like, boo.
Yeah.
But I mean, like a boo. They did not work at that. Doesn't matter.
Right. And so they're making another trek. They go from the...
sorry. This is the part where like Val and her are like riding together.
Yeah.
Except like, I don't know if you ever, have you ever ridden on a horse?
No.
So like during like a trot or a run, you're braced in the stirrups in the Western saddle that I was trained in. Right. Mm-hmm. But if you're in a saunter, like just a casual walk, you got to keep your back straight. You got to keep like erect, right? But if you don't want your hips to hurt for the rest of the fudging day, you have to keep them loose, right? Which is why, and there's no way to communicate this, but like in a film where like two people who are romantically inclined are sitting on a horse, it's like, and then all of you, it's like, you know, because you can't, you have to keep loose or you're going to hurt real bad. So if you're familiar with horses, as gross as it is, like they're fitting you together. Like it's a nearly a romantic thing.
As far as like hostages go, I think Mad Mardigan could have just like, you know, yeeted her off the horse after a mile because they had like someone like fighting the soldiers and they could have just like yeeted her off and then gone on their way. It's like, the movie's trying to turn these enemies into lovers, which is the enemies to lovers trope. And I don't know how I feel about it because it's like 1 minute I wanted to kill you and now I want to have sex with you. And it just screams an unhealthy relationship on so many levels.
First you wanted to kill me. Now you want to kiss me. Blow. We said that last episode.
Oh, yeah.
Val and Joanne were married during the production of this movie.
Okay.
Joanne's the lady?
Joanne Worley. Yeah. Worley.
Really? Really?
Wally.
Is that a Sean fact?
Wally. Yeah. Wally. Sorry.
They were later divorced, though. Because this is Val Kilmer.
I mean, like, I get it.
I mean, when you were talking about how he improvised his scenes, the only thing I could think of was, well, that explains his character in The Island of Dr. Moreau. I have never seen The Island of Dr. Moreau, but it's got like, Val Kilmer's in that. And I know he's not attractive by the end.
This is the only movie I've ever think that I can ever think of Val Kilmer as attractive in that I can think of.
Right.
I have not looked him up on IMDb, but I don't want to. So he's like, get your hair out of my face after obviously sniffing her hair real hard, Joe Biden like style. And then she's like, what did you mean about what you said all last night? He's like, what did I say all last night? And she's like, oh, of course you don't remember. I dwell in darkness without you, and it went away.
Yeah.
And he was all like, I'm just a different person. And she was like, you, buddy. And she like hits
elbows him.
Elbows him. They fall off the horse. He like pins her to the ground and has this very long moment that was like.
I mean, it's like, yeah.
It makes you question your heteronormativity. Like, do I want to be her? Do I want to be him?
Yeah, and she...
It just means we all deserve Black Poet shirts.
So she gets out from under him. She, like, knees him or kicks him in the groin. Yeah, and he's still going to go after her.
Knee him in the groin. She stomps his balls.
Yeah.
He's more than one time in this entire film, he looks like he wants her to step on his throat.
But here's the thing. Like, he picks up and he walks after her, even though she got away. And it's like... They know the other soldiers are coming after him.
Willow's like, hey, this way. And he's like, oh, man. Okay. He gets on his horse and Willow's like, hey, this way. And he's like, I'm on a horse. She's running. I could get her. But okay, better do what the Neanderthal.
No one.
Better do what the no one says.
So they get to the castle at Tira's Lean and they find that the entire castle is abandoned.
It's not abandoned. There's no troops there like they thought there would be. Everyone's frozen in stone or crystal.
Yeah, it's like the Dark Crystal from Dark Crystal.
good shout out. Yeah. Nice. And then they're yelling at each other. And then Val Kilmer steps in troll poop. And Willow's like, I hate trolls. Yeah. And then we're like, let's forget about that for a while. Because Val Kilmer starts wandering around. He finds tons of weapons. And he's like, nice.
He gets armor.
Yeah, yeah. That nice armor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Willow also takes another crack at getting Finn Rizzell out of... out of bird form.
It doesn't work. She turns into a goat. And then all of a sudden they hear horses approaching. So then what I like to think of as Mad Dog has to then...
Home alone this.
He spends the next 5 minutes like setting up booby traps all over the place because there's approximately 1 1/4 of them there to be able to fight. And he sets up crossbows. He sets up like barrels. He sets up. Oh, and then just as they're about to show up, he managed to shove both of the doors shut, which took an excruciating amount of time. You remember, mm-hmm. He like pushes one and you're like, oh no, that's not fast enough. He pushes the second door and you're like, oh no, that's not fast enough, right? Mm-hmm. And then he manages, as Sorsha's face comes into the window of the door, he manages to get the bar across,
right?
And then they all stop and they're like, oh no. they try pushing on it, which probably wouldn't take in very much.
It's like in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when the Vulgons get stopped by a fence.
Yes. Yes.
And then he turns around and Finn Rizzo's like, good job, Mad Bodkin.
What the hell happened to you? Except hell doesn't seem to be part of this landscape, but whatever. We're in the throes of it now. And as you know, in action scenes, we just kind of go with it real fast. So are you with us? So the baddies send the entire army back to the forest behind them, a field away, to chop down one tree with an axe, a single axe, one guy with an axe to make a battering ram to get into the castle, right? At which point we see Willow running across the balcony bridge, I would say.
Yeah, he like gets to the top level of a tower, and he puts down Allura, and then he like goes to the other side of a bridge that connects one tower to another tower. And as he's going across it, we see like this creepy little thing coming up from under him.
It's a troll, and we're like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. Oh, and he does a whole bunch of things while holding a baby. Like he opens a turret and he looks at a thing and he like runs mm-hmm. around. He's doing all this stuff all the time holding a baby. It just seems impractical to me.
Right.
I don't care how much you do with a baby Bjorn.
And then when he turns around, there's like a troll that pops out, and mm-hmm. Rizel's like, use the wand. And so he pulls out the wand and he says some magic words.
Glibbity glorp, you're now a plorp. And then he like, the thing melts. He falls to the ground. He melts into this weird brain ball.
Yeah.
And then like two like, hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal. Like
yeah.
two heads come out and he's like, well, that's gross. So he kicks it off into the moat.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's like Alka-Seltzer plop plop fizz fizz, and it's like, and he's like, I don't have time to deal with that right now. And he goes back to fighting another troll.
Right. So the thing that gets thrown into the moat, at this point, the soldiers have broken through the door and they're fighting, and Mad Mardigan
is like a million crossbows.
Right. Again, home alone the entire castle in like mm-hmm. under 5 minutes, mm-hmm. which is a skill in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But then as they're fighting, you see the thing that got thrown into the moat, two giant heads come out and everybody's terrified. And so they all rush out of the castle.
But then did you notice that Mad Dog yeah. runs out with them, and yeah. they're all standing outside the castle and they're like,
you're not on our side.
And he's like, oh shit, I'm not on your side. And he runs back into the castle because like there's a dragon. There's a dragon in there, but like he's not supposed to be there.
The dragon was referred to as the Ebersisk. This is the second time that George Lucas has used somebody's name to describe a villain.
Is it critic?
Can you just decide?
Oh, yeah,
that?
Ebert?
Siskel and Ebert.
Yes.
Oh, no.
What? What a burn.
Okay, here's the thing. Like, unless you're part of this community of critics, you might not necessarily pick up, like, every time they say kale, I'm automatically thinking of, like, the lettuce that switched out. That
it's devil lettuce that doesn't get you stoned.
It's lettuce that you give to water turtles because it's, like, a dark green. Like, I was thinking food. I was not thinking of Pauline kale.
Do you give kale to what Wonder Boy?
I used to. He was interested in it for, like, a hot minute, but now I just give him green leaf. But it's one of those things where it's like, I think like the food kale, but I'm watching this in like 2021 where kale's also like considered a superfood, even though superfood isn't actually a thing. And like, I'm not even going to know the name of this troll dragon thing unless I go like, it's something that like he's doing it for like uber nerds and uber fanboys of George Lucas. And like for general people like me, it's just like, okay, this doesn't stop me from enjoying the film, but like it also doesn't stop me from like finding valid criticism or agreeing with Siskel and Ebert, you know?
Say the name again one more time.
Ebersisk. That was a George Lucas idea. However, Ron Howard one-upped this because you know how Clint Howard is usually in like all of Ron Howard's movies?
No.
Ron Howard always brings in his brother.
Nepotism?
Is genuine nepotism.
To do a cameo?
Yes. Okay.
Clint. Oh, okay. Well, they couldn't find a role, or Ron couldn't find a role for Clint, so they designed the Ebersisk's face off of the face of Clint Howard, which is
Shut
the most trash thing that a brother can do to another brother.
Okay, so in Guardians of the Galaxy and the Suicide Squad that's coming up, both by done by James Gunn, he brings his brother, Sean Gunn, in to do some mocap work. He also brought Sean Gunn in to do like one of the most sympathetic characters in the second film. So it's like, you could tell that he actually respects his brother there. Like, what is Ron saying about Clint?
I don't know. And they could have easily put in Clint behind one of those troll faces for sure.
They look like elephant seals. They're elephant seals.
Yeah. With really long necks. Yeah.
I just imagine them like being like Waldorf and Statler. And like
why
every time they're shooting.
Always come here? I guess we'll never know. It's like a kind of torture to have to watch a show. Yeah. The only fire in here is my heartburn.
I mean, that would have been interesting. Like,
if they could talk.
If they could talk and it was just Waldorf and Sadler.
He does. I mean, the Ibercisk, the Ibercisk is like a mutated troll. So if the Ibercisk started talking and trolling people, that would be amazing.
Like, I mean,
they didn't really have the concept of internet troll.
No, but I mean, it was a troll that turned into a two-headed, fire-breathing, you know, monster. So
based on Ron Howard's brother's face.
The blinking is amazing. For the CGI or animated anything, the blinking, I'm always very judgmental about. The blinking was amazing. They blink really good. Is that stupid? I don't care. The blinking's great.
Good. And so the fighting continues. There's a couple of guys who are coming up the tower, and they're coming through the tower to where Allura is at. And Willow takes a sword, and he runs through both of them, and all three of them fall down to the tower. Mm-hmm. And at the very bottom of the tower, that's when Kale, spinach guy, comes in, and Willow's like, oh no, he's so scary because he's got a skull on his face. And then Kale, like, takes his horse up the stairs and then grabs the baby. Mm-hmm. And as that's happening, Sorsha is looking at all of the fun fighting that Mad Mardigan is doing, and she's just staring at him. And she's just staring at him. She's not fighting anybody, but she's just staring at him.
So Mad Mardigan saves Allura and Willow from a troll, like troll number three or whatever. And then he's all like, well. And he jumps on the head of a dragon. And as he does this, he becomes a little animated character, but you never see his face, so it's perfectly fine. And she's watching him, and she's like, nice, well done. Yes, I like this. He stabs it through the neck, falls to the ground, right? And then apparently killing one head kills both heads. And then...
because of indigestion.
Heartburn? Never mind.
I don't remember the whole Pepto-Bismol. Yeah, heartburn.
It, like they
nausea, indigestion, I mean, upset stomach, diarrhea.
We're 90s kids. We were fed on advertisements.
This is where my notes go. Let me explain. Except there's too much. Let me sum up. So all of that said, she like grabs him off the ground because he's like on his back and he thinks she's going to finish him. And she pulls him up by like a strap across his chest, and he's like, huh? And she's like, and now we make out. And she kisses him, and it's like, huh? And then like Skull Guy's like, huh? And they're all like, don't know. Right.
It feels like the way the monster died, which is just sort of like, yep, we got to get this plot point taken care of. So it's just going to happen.
Yep. And they got the baby.
So that means Bavmorda has the baby. Oh, like, and they make it, they have the baby, but they flee because they see Urk's army coming towards them. And yeah, they're like, Urk's army, we got to leave. And so they flee. Mm-hmm. Willow gets asked by Mad Mardigan if he can ride because he's so distraught. Mm-hmm. And so.
Bavdorba.
Yeah.
Is that her name? She just looks like a ripoff of the Evil Queen from Sleeping Beauty.
Right.
Nope. Snow White.
Sure.
Sleeping Beauty?
Both?
Yes.
Okay.
The pretty one of them.
Okay.
I don't think we've talked about this actress before.
Oh, yes. But she keeps screaming, set up the ritual! Set up the ritual!
Right.
Hey, Lydia, do you know where you've seen this actress before?
Jean Marsh? Name definitely sounds familiar.
Oh, it should.
Hmm.
Jean Marsh played Mombi in Return to Oz.
Oh, yeah!
Yay!
Nice. Which kind of reminds me of the other lady who was in The NeverEnding Story. There was that part that I screamed out in the movie that we were watching when she pricked Willow's finger. But we were just like trying to get past it because there was already so much that we had talked about. But I was like, while we were watching it and she pricks Willow's finger, she's like, I was like, it has to hurt if it's to heal. And then turns out that was the lady who talked about it. I didn't even know it.
Yes.
Anyways.
Yes. Jean, you have a good ear. You have a good ear for it.
Jean Marsh's Mombi. So basically, we're just recasting all of our powerful ladies in this movie.
And I'm super down.
Mm-hmm.
NeverEnding Story lady versus Return to Oz lady.
Yeah, yeah. Like the witch wench versus the headless witch.
Okay, so the troops from Uruk is... Oh, by the way, the reason we keep saying that is...
Oh, no!
I feel like we didn't address this. And I'm sorry, Jen, for your editing in the future, but... One of my favorite jokes of the moment is, what did the DJ name his son? Eric! Eric?
It's not as funny, applauders, if you can't see the little finger scratch.
Yeah, you gotta put your hand up by your head and like act like you're scratching the disc. You gotta be like, Eric! 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 And now I hope you're doing it in the car as yeah. I'm saying it, because it's really funny.
And plus, the character's name is actually Eric. It's not Eric. It's Eric.
Yeah, in the captions for the movie, you see it spelled A-R-I-K.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's wrong.
And we don't like it.
That's wrong? How is it in IMDb?
A-I-R-K.
Oh, A-I-R-K. Okay.
So it's A-I-R-K, and then his last name. Yeah, it's Eric Thaubaer, T-H-A-U-G-H-B-A-E-R. This guy is obviously from our last movie, 13th Warrior.
That's a Nordic boy if I've ever seen one or heard their name spelled out with a B.
I don't like it.
It was Jen reading my face.
So, Eric's army takes Willow and Mad Mardigan and... takes them all to Bavmorda's castle. They're like right outside.
Let's bed down for the night and then we'll attack on dawn. And then she comes out and she's like, y'all gonna be piggies, what's up? Yeah. And she's like, pig, pig. And like starts zapping them all. And then Finn Rizelle is like, Willow, come over here. It's like, see the thing I told you that, you know, yeah. We didn't know about. And
it's,
he's just like,
a protection spell.
Protection spell, protection spell. And he manages to not get turned into a pig. And she doesn't get turned from a goat. And then, so everybody's, she even finds like her daughter. And it's just like, and I mm-hmm. trust it, mama. It doesn't matter. She turns her into a pig too. Or a gorgon, I think she says, like the word gorgon, it sounds like. But like, we don't see what she turns into. What happens is we cut to Willow, who's now saved, who is now going to turn Gazelle, mm-hmm. Giselle. I'm so sorry, guys. Fen Rizelle. Why is that? I have to walk through it. You should watch me try to write an essay. It's pretty pathetic. So comes the best montage, I would say, of like, how did they do this? Was this...
This morph yeah. style.
Is it stop?
It is stop, but it was invented by ILM. They're responsible for this effect. And it transitions into multiple animals this time.
She goes from a goat to an ostrich, and then from an ostrich to a turtle or tortoise, and then from a tortoise into a tiger, and then from a tiger into a lady. And then she looks at herself and she's like, oh, I guess it's been longer because she's old.
Yeah. Did we skip over the part where we're way back in the cage?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay. So way back in the cage, she's like, turn me back, Willow, before she gets turned into a crow. And she's like, turn me back. I'm a young, beautiful woman. And Mad Dog's like, yeah, no, you should pay attention to her. You need to turn her back right away.
Yeah. Concentrate, Willow.
Only time he's interested in her becoming a human.
Yeah. And then she turns out to be a beautiful old lady.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, I cross fingers I would look as cute as she does.
Right.
And then, like, Willow does the great, fantastic Ben from Night of the Living Dead thing. He just throws a blanket over her because
mm-hmm.
if someone is vulnerable and exposed, you are in charge of not their demureness. You're in charge
dignity.
You're in charge of their dignity. If somebody cannot be in charge of theirs, you're in charge of theirs. And that's not to intercede for somebody who's being flamboyant or flagrant. But if somebody's vulnerable and you're like, oh, you dropped trow on accident, you like Like, there's this beautiful clip on YouTube. Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry. Small rabbit hole. It's not going to be a long. But, like, there's this beautiful video where a lady's hijab in, during a soccer match becomes unclasped and her hair is exposed. And that's not acceptable, right? That is a sign of immodesty, as far as I know. And all these other girls flock around her so that she can adjust her scarf and become covered again. And I'm like, that is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite videos I've ever seen on the internet. And so when Willow throws a blanket around her, I'm like, of course you would. She's a nice old lady who's now naked on the floor with all these pigs everywhere. Like, yeah. Good on you, Willow. Mm-hmm. You only decent human being in this entire film, besides your children and your wife.
Right. And maybe Migosh. Maybe.
Maybe. We don't know enough about Migosh.
Yeah. And so she's like, okay, bring the pigs back. Bring in the pigs. And so he like starts bringing in the pigs one by one and she changes them back to human.
And then puts them under a protection spell so that they cannot be turned back into pigs or anything else while they're with her.
Right. And the, it cuts back to Bavmorda, who's like doing this ritual and like rain is coming down and the baby gets like bundled up in black and red. So she's super dramatic.
It looks like electrical tape. Did you notice?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, did you notice that when Willow was casting the human spell on Giselle, like there was like so many more words than before?
Yeah. Like actual, like I can understand the words
like
that he's
English
saying.
English words, like, yeah. Yeah, I didn't even write it down, but right. It was like way more.
I have one Sean fact about the pigs in the production of this would not stop. They had to douse them with cold water, buckets of cold water to keep them apart from each other. They just would not stop. Also, I think that some of the best transition makeup that I've seen.
Oh, yeah.
Was during that scene, especially when Val Kilmer, they have a close up of Val Kilmer as he's being turned
into a pig.
The
helmet's falling off and the clothes being pulled away and like the fingers to hoofs visuals. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now I can't get pig f- out of my head. So thanks, Jen.
Moving on, they're back in the tent and they're planning something and Willow has a plan and they're like, oh, I don't know if that's gonna work, and because he's a farmer, and they're like, look, we got to get this figured out, and you know, you're gonna be fine. And so they're just like, okay, so this is the plan. And then it's like the next morning.
Well, okay, so Willow goes, I'm a farmer and back in my place we have gophers, and they're like, we're warriors, not farmers. What good is that to us? And he's like, well, let me tell you. And they all lean in. And I'm like, you right. said gophers and you're in front of a giant stone building.
Right.
What could you mean other than going underground in some capacity? But I 100% thought they were going to burrow into the castle and I was wrong. So I guess maybe that's not a good point to make.
Before like we move too far, because like the next is like actually in the battle, I want you to know, plotters, that on this field in front of the castle, there are all of these tents that are up. That becomes important because of what happens later on.
Well, also we do a cutaway before battle where the ceremony is going on and Evil Queen cuts a lock of the baby's hair. And as a child who watched this, that made me more mad than nearly anything else. Because, and I don't know if you can see this, Lydia, but I cannot grow out my bangs because I sleep on my face and all of my baby hairs break before they ever become cohesive bangs. Right? So I've got all these tiny little tendrils and they make me so mad. And I was like, you can't cut your bangs like that. You can't just cut a lock off the front of a baby's head. That's going to grow out all stupid. That's going to grow out weird and dumb. And I hated it for that. I hated it for that.
What's interesting is the fact that this scene mirrors when Kaya gave her hair to Willow, which kind of like, you know, going back to the whole like, you know, oh, it's given, like, it's a part of her and she's like given it to him. But it's like literally her braid. And you can tell that it was her hair. She like cut her hair.
It was her crown that she gave to him. And the difference is a willing gift to embolden somebody as opposed to a taken thing.
Right.
To weaken someone.
But it was also like, okay, so like giving either the giving or the taking of hair, it's important when in this world where magic has some relevance. And so like maybe this was like his protection. She was like, this take, you know, not just as a, you know, take this as a remembrance of me, but take this as like a way of protecting you.
Yes. And I think we see that in just a second.
Part 3 of our review of 1988's Willow has concluded a plotter, but we still have a few more details to share with you in our plot walkthrough, as well as our shocked and applaudable moments. Until then, how about some reviews of other great 80s movies? The Heritage Film Club recently released their discussion on Say Anything. And Four Nerds by Nerds recently released their watch on one of Josh and Ben's favorites, Back to the Future. Check out this release's description for links to these amazing shows. Hey, this is your audio engineer and Clint Howard fangirl, Jen. If you're like me, you have so many podcasts in your listening cycle that sometimes it's difficult to decide what to listen to next. That's one of the reasons I use Podchaser to organize my shows. They've got bookmarks and playlists that will help you remember what to come back to later. And if you're wondering, no, this isn't an ad. We just really think you should check out Podchaser.com to help you organize what you listen to. You can visit us there by visiting podchaser.com/shocked and applaud. We'll be back in 1 week for the conclusion of our review of this 80s fantasy epic. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.